wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time to check in with Gordon Goldsborough. He joins me now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we talking about today?
Well, listeners may recall that a year ago, I had an adventure in leading five antique cars along the original route of the Trans-Canada Highway from the Ontario border to Saskatchewan. It was called the Pine to Prairie Relic Run, and 9 days from now, I'll be involved in another such drive, this time on the original Sunshine Highway.
Ooh, I've never heard of the Sunshine Highway. Tell me more about that.
Well, it's no wonder you've not heard of it, because it was established over 100 years ago, but it's largely forgotten today. It preceded the Trans-Canada Highway by almost 10 years, which means the route was much more primitive, barely more than a dirt track. So the Sunshine Highway Relic Run this year may be an even greater adventure than our drive last year.
And why do you want to undertake drives like these?
Well, you know, it's one thing to drive an antique car along a modern paved highway, but it's quite another to navigate a bumpy, rutted dirt road that is closer to the experience that I think people driving cars in the past would have had. You know, I like to think that these relic runs are a way to give us insight into what it was like to drive cars in Manitoba a century ago. Early roads were nothing like today's highways, and relic runs remind us of how much better we have it today.
So tell us more about the Sunshine Highway.
It was a route connecting Brandon, Manitoba with Sioux City, Iowa, a total distance of 700 miles, about 1,100 kilometers. It was to be the primary road connection between Western Canada and the United States, and would therefore be the gateway for scads of American tourists. The organizers had a grand vision for its eventual extension all the way to Mexico. Started in 1916, development of the route was halted by the First World War. So, by 1919, after the war ended, work resumed.
Who developed and maintained the route?
Well, in the early 1920s, when this was all happening, provincial and state governments were not as actively involved in road construction as they are today. The premise of the Sunshine Highway was that it would stimulate international tourism to communities along the route. So each town or municipality was asked to chip in to help with upkeep of the Sunshine Highway that was in their vicinity. So in other words, it was a very local initiative. In return for this investment, boosters of the Sunshine Highway published what they called a route book. And it listed for communities along the way where motorists could find such things as campgrounds and hotels, restaurants, good fishing and hunting spots, and, well, of course, and inevitably, garages for emergency repairs.
When was the first use of the Sunshine Highway in Canada?
As near as I can tell, the first cavalcade of Americans to enter Canada via the new route came in early 1921. And through that year, I found numerous mentions in historical newspapers of the Sunshine Highway.
And how was the Sunshine Highway promoted?
Well, in addition to that Sunshine Highway route book that I mentioned, in 1922, the Manitoba Motor League, the precursor, by the way, to today's CAA Manitoba, they published an automobile road guide. It provided detailed turn-by-turn directions for scenic routes around the province. To drive the Canadian portion of the Sunshine Highway, you started at Crystal City. You turned left at the town's railway station and you went 1/10 of a mile. Then you turned right and went 1/5 of a mile, and so on. You know, and I don't even know exactly how this all worked, but apparently you would pass through Clearwater, Glenora, Balder, Glenboro, Wawanesa, Nesbitt, Rounthwaite. Well, you would finally arrive in Brandon, a total distance of 105 miles, 170 kilometers, and hopefully nothing happened to you along the way. Of course, at that time, vehicles had rudimentary instrumentation, so I don't know how they would have even measured the distance just to know where to turn. But I suppose that was part of the adventure, too.
So what ended up happening to the Sunshine Highway?
I searched historical newspapers, and I found in early 1927 that the Brandon City Council decided to withhold its annual grant of the princely sum of $180 to the Sunshine Highway. And apparently the reason was there had been complaints that the route was not being maintained properly, and also that the small municipalities were not paying their fair share of those upkeep costs. By 1929, references in the newspapers referred to the, quote, former Sunshine Highway, which suggests to me that the route was now defunct. But, you know, I think the main reason for the failure is that the Sunshine Highway, as a route for trade and tourism, was simply outcompeted by another international highway. In 1920, Highway 75, south of Winnipeg, had become the Canadian portion of something called the Pine to Palm Highway, and it ran all the way to New Orleans. By 1926, Highway 75 was graveled all the way to the U.S. border. And, you know, so it was now a more appealing way for motorists to avoid the legendary gumbo of the Red River Valley. And I think it's worth pointing out to listeners that the Pine to Palm Highway, which, by the way, is also known as the Lord Selkirk Highway here in Canada, as the Jefferson Highway in the U.S., it still exists today. You could drive it all the way from Winnipeg to New Orleans.
And what is the Sunshine Highway route like today?
With an exception of a few short sections that are paved, the entire route is on gravel, you know, which is an improvement. I think the original route was probably a lot of it just dirt. So I think that the driving will be a more authentic experience than last year's trip on the Trans-Canada Highway, because that's what both highways would have looked like back in 1921. They would have been treacherous to drive. In fact, the highway was probably not even graveled for its entire length. A particular highlight of this year's Relic Run for me is that we're going to cross the Assiniboine River on the Stockton Ferry. This is the very last river ferry operating in southern Manitoba, and I think it'll be a hoot to see old cars being carried across the river on the ferry, just like they would have been back in 1921. So again, a real authentic experience.
How is the Sunshine Highway route marked?
Oh, well, there's the rub. Because it was never a designated municipal or provincial road, the Sunshine Highway is completely unmarked. And this will be a challenge for our drivers, so we're having custom printed signs put up at turns along the route. And in fact, these signs resemble the ones that were installed back in the 1920s. They're emblazoned with a large letter S surrounded by a circle, so the Sunshine Highway.
Which vehicles are involved in the Relic Run?
Well, presently there's 11. We're not sure. There may be some last-minute entries. But the oldest of the cars we know about is from 1920, so it's over 100 years old. And the newest is a truck from 1935. The average age is 1928, so these are all elderly vehicles. There are 6 Fords, 2 Model Ts, 3 Model As, and 1 truck. There's a Chevy, a Hudson, a Nash, an Opel, and an Overlander. So some makes that you've never even heard of.
I want to see some pictures of this, Gordon.
Oh, and there will be. We're going to actually be taking a video along the whole way to document this trip for posterity.
Very cool. Is there any overlap with the drivers who participated in your Pine to Prairie Relic Run last year?
Yep. We got 3 drivers from last year's Relic Run who are participating again this year. And in fact, they're driving the same cars as before. Last year's drive took 3 days at an average speed of about 50 kilometers an hour. This time it's a single day, and I suspect the pace will be slower because, of course, we're going to be on gravel most of the time.
How can listeners learn more about the Relic Run?
Well, we have a website. It's Sunshine Highway 1921. The numbers 1921.ca. Sunshine Highway 1921.ca. And there, listeners can find a route map, a list of the cars, some information about the route, and so on. And it also gives the approximate times when we're going to pass through communities along the way in case people want to come out and cheer us on. So, Tuesday, the 23rd of July, we're going to start at 8 a.m. at the Canada-U.S. border crossing south of Crystal City. If all goes well, we expect to pull into the grounds of Brandon's Keystone Center around 5 p.m. And if we do have problems, well, we'll just have to deal with those as they come. Either way, I will let listeners know in a few weeks how they turn out. And again, I will bring in some pictures, Nadia, so you can see how it transpired.
Very cool, Gordon. Thank you for this.
And, we'll hopefully make it here next week.
Fingers crossed. What will we be talking about next week?
Well, I'm a volunteer at the Manitoba Agricultural Museum. And next week, the museum will be hosting Canada's largest farm heritage festival, the Thresherman's Reunion. We're going to have a guest in studio to talk about the museum generally and the reunion in particular, which I hope some of our listeners may want to check out for themselves.
Well, I'm sorry to be missing it. I won't be here next week, but Bruce, you'll get to participate in that.
Can't wait.
See, there you go. The enthusiasm, Gordon.
Absolutely. Love it.
Thank you, Gordon.
We'll talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.